Penguin Random House Canada presents A Daily Obsession by M.G. Vasanji. Read for you by Raoul Baneja. Munir Aslam Khan. It came as a whim, a thought that flew in from nowhere and spread wings in his mind that he should visit India. More precisely, Delhi, the city from which his grandfather had departed 100 years ago, when it was the new showpiece of the British Raj. He had heard about that city as a child in his home in Kenya, shown no interest, and about the reason for that departure, he had caught the barest innuendo of an intrigue that had no conceivable relevance. Munir Aslam Khan was recently widowed, his wife of many years having died suddenly in a car accident, skidding on an ice patch, a block away from their home in North Toronto. It had been Halloween night, and bitterly cold. The first snow had come early and unannounced, and having given its warning, it had disappeared. A year later now, he had not recovered. He did not expect to. His sense of loss, grief was too strong a word, he knew he would always carry as a memorial to their years spent together. The awkward sympathies from the neighbors had ceased. There remained only the friendly banter and the occasional joke from Andy or Jim or Joanna, called out from their porches as he passed on the sidewalk. He found some solace in his reading, which now consisted of histories mainly. His own writing had run into dry ground. He had no ambition left in that direction. He had written whatever he had inside him, a few books of fiction with modest success. Anything more now was mere addendum or exercise, scratching at futility. And so he was often at loose ends. There were no longer any pressing chores, which he had disliked when she was around, but had helped to fill the days of their later years, as they'd like to call them. They had discussed the eventuality of death. He was assured that she, always the better earner, would remain in comfort for the long remainder of her life that she could anticipate. But death ignores statistics. Knows not night or day, as his elders would piously proclaim in their fatalistic moments. And here he was, alone. There was the numbing comfort of scotch or a red at night. It was the end of November, and he was returning from a long walk in the neighborhood. Approaching home, he watched a moving truck arrive a few houses down, and proceed to unload. A wiry young man, barely in his 30s, already bald and very obviously of Indian origin, stood behind the truck, watching stuff come down from the back. On the porch, his wife, smart in tight denims, holding a girl of about 3 by the hand, also stood watching. Techies, Munir mused, with ready-made money. We came with pennies in our pockets, he recalled, of his generation of new Canadians. Munir stared at the scene. A sofa came wobbling down, as if riding a wave from the van, and he felt an irrepressible surge of compassion. To be that young. And, with no apparent logic, the further thought occurred. I should go to India. It had been always at the back of the mind, a journey that he should make one day, eventually. Those were her words. One day, eventually. Eileen, a Scot by descent, had no association with India. She had agreed in principle that they should go. It was necessary for him, but the thought of catching a bug, something noxious and Indian, had always held her back. For Munir, the prospect was daunting precisely because of its significance. A return to the ancestral homeland after something like a century. Munir could now vaguely recall, as a child, imagining India alternately as Delhi, a strange city somewhere that might appear in the Arabian Nights, which Sinbad might have visited. But while a lot of other travel was undertaken by Munir and Eileen during their marriage, India remained undone. A hole in their world map of journeys. Now, watching the young family moving into his neighborhood, the woman directing the movers through the narrow door, the child tugging at the mother, the father holding the storm door open, The revelation came without equivocation. He should visit India, especially Delhi, and fill that hole. He realized that with a surname like Khan, there might be a hitch obtaining a visa. Such were the times, it could not be helped. The world traveled nervously these days. And indeed, when he submitted his visa application at the Indian consulate, the clerk raised her eyebrows with a pert smile as if to say, "Fat chance." "Will it take long?" Munir felt compelled to ask.
"Depends," she said, "on when we hear from India."
"Do all applications get sent to India?"
"Only certain ones."
He nodded. He had time. And if he was rejected as a possible threat to that nation, so be it. But only a week later, he was called for an interview. It was scheduled with the consul himself. Munir announced himself at the window on the other wing of the floor. The door was opened for him, and after a short wait alone in a quiet anteroom, he was ushered into a large office with an oversized desk. Aditya Sharma, the consul, stood up and came over to shake hands. He had a warm smile. He was a small, unassuming man, wearing a dark Indian vest buttoned at the neck. He tried speaking in Urdu, and failing to get a response from Munir, continued in a plain though fluent English.
"Mr. Khan, I'm delighted to meet you. Normally I would not interfere in the visa process, but your application gave me an opportunity to see you in person. I am honored, sir."
Munir was at a loss for words. Such humility from a diplomat. People occasionally recognized his name in Toronto, and on rare occasions even his face. It was flattering, but also disconcerting. Having gone through periods of literary fame, such as accompany the publication of a book, followed by the relative oblivion afterwards, he had reached a phase in his life when, no longer quite a writer, he preferred solitude and anonymity, and yet there was always just that frisson when vanity got aroused. It annoyed him to succumb to it, for with every instance of recognition came doubts. What did it mean, this flattery? How true was it, and how deserved? Did it matter? It was better to remain unrecognized, unperturbed, to get on with living.
"I am flattered, Mr. Sharma, thank you. Is this to do with my visa? I was told the application would have to be sent to India."
"Oh, no, no, no.
With your name, I would understand it, of course. These are not easy times we live in." "Yes, I'm pleased you understand, Mr. Khan. Many people don't and complain. But you don't have to worry. Here is your passport with the visa. We've given you 10 years. And for your inconvenience, I've waived your fee."
"Thank you, Mr. Sharma. I am obliged." Munir took his passport and the uncashed money order. They sat down on the sofa, which was set towards the back wall, and the receptionist brought tea and biscuits. They chatted. Aditya Sharma had only recently taken up his post. He had been previously in Addis Ababa, and before that in Kazakhstan. He had been to Nairobi, stayed at the Masai Mara National Reserve. They talked about literature. Mr. Sharma asked him to recommend Canadian writers he might read. Finally, he told Munir,
"You should go to the Jaipur Literature Festival in Jaipur, Rajasthan."
"Why haven't you done so?"
"I'll get you invited. The organizers are known to me."
"Thank you," Munir said, though he was done with festivals too, but there was no point in sounding rude or arrogant. He parted on the warmest terms with the consul. They agreed to meet again, and the consul invited him to the annual Indian Independence Day reception the following August. There were the medical preparations, beginning with a visit to his doctor, who prescribed a bevy of prophylactics. There was advice from people to drink only bottled water, to refuse ice, not to eat salads and fruit, however enticing they looked. Absolutely no street food. There were all the means devised for travelers to carry money safely on their person. A SIM card was essential. He should carry passport-sized photos of himself. He flew via London, where there was a long stopover, which he spent walking along the city streets familiar to him from the past. He dipped into a few bookstores and paid a quick visit to the National Gallery. It was late evening when he boarded his onward flight. The terminal was quiet at this time.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?